Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn, every Tuesday from roughly 12 to roughly 12:45. Joined, as usual, in the studio with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing?
Good.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear it. And, of course, we got Jack in the engineering booth.
Hello.
And special guests in the studio today. We have two of them. We didn't get, even though Harold McGee is in town, he's not our special guest today. He's on a leash for the Museum of Food and Drink. More to announce on that in the next couple of months. But we are super pleased to have in the studio with us today Ariel Johnson, who is the head researcher at MAD with 1D. You want to describe what that is, Ariel?
Oh, so MAD is started as a symposium and is like a food and food research nonprofit that's run out of restaurant Noma in Copenhagen.
Yeah. And Noma is like a, anyone ever heard of that restaurant?
Maybe a few people.
Maybe a few people have heard of that restaurant. And also Don Lee. And Don, you want to tell them what you do-ish?
I currently work for Cocktail Kingdom, doing a little bit of product development and also working on trade education now.
Yeah. More like Don is the evil overlord that runs kind of the back, the behind the scenes of the way the cocktail like world works. Like that's his actual title is evil overlord. Right?
Yeah, that's the subtitle.
Yeah, yeah.
The invisible hand.
He's actually, the invisible hand that feeds or removes. But he's not an evil overlord.
Benevolent
overlord. In the sense that an overlord can be benevolent.
In a true kind of a Aristotelian, Platonic, you know, kind of a philosopher king.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, so he runs the kingdom for the betterment of, it's aptly named Cocktail Kingdom.
Yeah, that is apt.
You know, because he runs the kingdom. Anyways, Don may or may not also. And by the way, Ariel, before she was the researcher at MAD there in Noma, you were postdoc there, right?
No, I was a like PhD student.
PhD, so got her PhD from UC Davis, and her thesis was on bitters. Correct?
Correct. Flavor chemistry.
Flavor chemistry, specifically of bitters. We have them on the... We're going to get some... By the way, if you have any questions for this crew, I encourage you to call in to 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. And because we have no sense of brains, I didn't heat up water beforehand, we're going to be tasting a little bit later on in the program this product called Vipova. What the hell does that mean, Vipova? Did anyone read their literature?
No.
Like,
I think they had some kind of statement that it's about like vitality and something else.
Vitality?
It's one of those invented words.
Yeah? Yeah, nah, vitality.
Mm. I don't know what the pova part.
Pova, like Pavlova?
Maybe. Pavlovian.
Do you like, well, I was thinking of like the
oh, like the delicious dessert?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like those?
Yeah, they're delicious.
What are your thoughts? Meringues and fruit and
mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong.
You know what's a good word? Like not related, but I'm just thinking of piping stuff out. You know what's a good word? Dacquoise.
Dacquoise. That is a good word.
Good word, right? Mm-hmm. So Ariel may or may not be an expert in the chemistry of what's going on in this, and Don may or may not be an expert. Oh, what is this Vipova stuff? This Vipova stuff is a legal tea with cannabis extractives in it. And Don may or may not be an expert on cannabis extractives. When he is in certain states, jurisdictions, and countries,
Wait, now
he's an expert.
Now he's Lon D, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we have another person in the studio. His name is Lon D, and he's going to be discussing his maybe first-hand knowledge with maybe products like this, right?
Yeah, coming soon.
Yeah, he'll be here in a minute. So, so you guys want to weigh in on exactly what it is that we're going to be tasting here, what this Vipova stuff is? Anyone?
Well, my guess is that it's basically like they just took some hemp oil, extracted some, you know, cannabinoid compounds into it, and then put it into the tea in the same way you would make like an Earl Grey tea. Instead of bergamot oil, it's just some kind of cannabinoid oil.
Yeah, they took one of these like low THC strains that you can get that's like high in the other cannabinoid compounds, and then enriched that via like a fat extraction into tea.
Okay, so why do I want that? First of all, is it a taste thing? Like, do you like the if you had had marijuana tea a lot or extractives, do you like the taste of it?
I've never actually tried doing a water extraction in the kind of a tea sense because you're not going to extract it because it's oil soluble.
Exactly.
So you normally wouldn't do that. The flavor, though, would be, you know, it just would taste like dried grass mostly. It'd just be bitter. It wouldn't really be a specific kind of a...
Like maybe sort of vaguely herbal.
Right.
Like yerba mate?
A little bit more green than yerba mate.
Do you find yerba mate nasty or good?
It's okay, but it's almost more of a bark kind of a flavor. It's more tannic.
Really? It's not woody. Yep. It's surprising. It's like, why is
compared, it... Compared to marijuana, I would say.
Oh. Mate is more...
Yeah, mate is much more.
All right. So why? Any ideas, you guys, on why anyone would want this to have this stuff?
Like, it says it gets rid of schizophrenia.
It says it does a lot of things.
Well, count me in.
Yeah.
Cures cancer, apparently.
Yeah.
I mean, so like cannabinoids as like a class of compounds tend to have varying different effects on like the brain and your neurochemistry, and where like THC is really good at psychoactive effects, getting you stoned, the cannabidiol has like other less sort of stoning mental effects.
Like,
well, it's like supposed to help with like anxiety and depression, and can like stabilize more like other mental disorders like schizophrenia, apparently, maybe.
Well, is this according to their data or stuff you've read outside of their data?
I googled this morning, and there's a lot of interest in like CBD as like a therapeutic cannabinoid.
Right. A lot of interest, but no, not a lot of studies in, except for specific.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, so, okay.
It acts on, like, different brain receptors than THC.
Right. So the question is that for those folk that self-medicate with marijuana to get themselves mentally right, which, you know, we all know, so is the speculation that's not actually the THC that's helping them self-regulate, that's just a side benefit?
Well, they might want to be looking for, like, a high cannabidiol strain rather than a high THC.
No, why not
strain?
Both? What's wrong with just having both?
Well, you could do high both, but...
Why not?
Yeah, why not do both?
Indeed.
Uncle Sam, that's why.
Yeah,
he's holding us back.
Exactly.
So,
government conspiracy.
So, like, CBD stuff... Now, say what is it? Cannabis what?
Cannabidiol?
Yeah. Does this cannabidiol stuff, make you confused at all, or no? Can you operate heavy machinery while you're using cannabidiol?
I guess we'll find out.
I have no heavy machinery to operate.
I'm sure we can find.
We
something.
Can probably get some.
Yeah, find some. Jack, you got any heavy machinery over there?
I don't know. Would you count recording equipment as heavy machinery?
Only if you lift it up and try to throw it over your head, and put pretty heavy.
No.
Yeah.
I can make heavy sounds. I mean.
Oh my God! Do you have one? We should get one before we go to.
Oh.
Oh,
wow.
What's the stuff that makes you hungry after you've smoked up? Is it this stuff or?
I don't know. I think it might be THC though.
Oh, that's straight up THC.
I think like. This helps like counter some of the like negative effects of THC, like paranoia and such.
So this is not going to make you paranoid.
This will not. I don't think so.
We'll find out.
We'll find out.
Well, but Stas says it takes like 5 hours to kick in, so we'll have to let you guys know next week how we feel. I don't know how this works. By the way, so like we're not going to have to load up the chopped and screwed version of Mary Kate and Ashley's pizza song.
Pizza.
I think we should
P-I-Z-Z-I.
Share that with the world, Dave.
Pizza.
That's like I just learned about that yesterday. See, I'm so behind on my internet like viral videos that you know. Anyway, we didn't talk about the chicory ice cream last week, right? I didn't get to that
you
one.
Did
I did talk about chicory? All right. I like to. You sure I got to the chicory?
I think so. Jack?
Jack, did I talk about chicory last week?
I don't think so.
Yeah. No, Stas was just about to. Ellie wrote in and was just about to get nuked because Stas was like, yeah, I don't care about that question. I don't want you to answer it ever.
Whoa.
Okay, and Ariel, you'll be good on this. And you ever do it? Don, a frequent denizen of New Orleans, do you enjoy chicory coffee?
It's okay.
You hate it like a good person would.
It's quaint. It's the custom of of New Orleans. So.
Oh yeah.
In the same way, they'll have a beignet when I'm down there. I don't really look for one up here. I'll have a little chicory coffee with my beignet.
Yeah, I think it's I don't like milk in my coffee, and they dump so much milk into it to make it palatable that I don't know. Yeah. Do you know that? Well, I don't know. I'm not going to get into it. Okay. I was recently trying to make chicory ice cream and started off by simmering the milk, turning off the heat, and dumping the ground chicory root in it like I would do when making coffee ice cream. Well, that did not go too well, and the milk curdled a bit. I suppose chicory is acidic? I assume chicory is acidic? Right? I don't think it's acidic. I don't think it's that acidic, but Ariel's looking it up for you. Or is it maybe some other reaction that caused the curdling? Maybe a lower heat would not cause this to happen. What is the best way to infuse something like that, ISI, or maybe cold infusion in the fridge for a longer period? Any idea if there's a listing of some sort of rule or thumb for ingredients that could curdle milk like that and should be infused some other way? By the way, I did not throw away the curdled milk. Pizza. I strained it very well and blended it with 50% sugar by weight. I'm hoping to use it in cocktail experiments and see how it tastes. Any pointers about that? Spirits, methods. Any pointers on that, Don? Like chicory whey?
Chicory whey. If it hadn't curdled, you can do kind of a milk punch thing. I don't know. You could, worst case, just try freezing it and using it as your ice. You can add a little bit without making too much chicory flavor.
But he turned it into a simple syrup.
Oh, it's already a syrup, yeah.
Shake with it.
See what happens.
Shake.
Like a Polaroid picture.
Yeah, shake it. Yeah. See you shake your tail feather. Anyway, my point is this. Here's your problem. You have many problems. I almost guarantee you. You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm not saying in terms of chicory and ice cream. I think what it is milk is one of those things that's balancing itself on the edge of curdling pretty much all the time. So if your milk is older and it's had bacteria growing in it for a while, it might be slightly more acidic, which is going to make it more apt to curdle. So you could raise the pH a little bit with a pinch of – and I wouldn't do this, but you could raise the pH a little bit with a pinch of baking soda. Yeah, Ariel, that's going to – not a lot, because if you take it too high, it's also going to destabilize. Milk wants to be in a specific kind of range of pHs, which is where it kind of comes to you in the jug or out of the cow, right? Assuming that wasn't your problem or partial, when you're heating it, the milk's going to be less stable. And also, there's a lot of polyphenolic compounds in chicory that much like tannins are going to cause, and it might actually be tannin. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be
that are going to cause things to curdle. So the same way that if you make an extraordinarily strong infusion of like sumac or any other kind of bark and heat in milk, you can curdle it. So the good news is that you might be able to do exactly what you're doing if you add the sugar first, because high sugar concentrations allow you to stabilize. So like, for instance, if you make if you do a 50-50 milk sugar thing, you can dump acid into it and it'll thicken, but it won't break. You know what I mean? Because there's just so much sugar that I guess it's – I don't know why. It's just like not allowing the proteins to get together and curdle as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, or like complexing them in some
– doing something.
Way. I mean, sugar binds water, so proteins bind water, and that's how they fold.
Right. So if you're assuming that a typical ice cream base that I would use would have a liter of milk/cream and would have 170 grams of sugar. So I don't know if that's enough to stabilize it for what you're doing, right? So you could either do a cold infusion, or definitely add – after you add anything, it's going to stabilize, like egg yolks or anything like that. I would just do your infusion after the stuff has been stabilized. Or else just do like a hardcore tincture of chicory and then add it as an alcohol, but it's not too much, so you lower the rate. But almost certainly you're dealing with a tannin or other similar kind of like phenolic-y crap, right?
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean,
tannin's a phenolic thing, right?
Tannin is a phenolic thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and those like bind to proteins. That's how like astringency happens.
And that's, as Mirval would say, why? That's why we put milk in our chicory coffee, because it's unpalatably like astringent and bitter, right? It's astringent and bitter. And the astringency stuff is the stuff that's binding with the milk and getting wiped out, which is why we add milk to tea and super strong tea in milk, I can get that to curdle in the presence of liquid. So in other words, like things that will, like alcohol destabilizes, acid destabilizes, tannins destabilize milk, heat destabilizes milk. Sugar protects kind of milk to a certain extent. I think egg yolks pretty much protect it to a certain extent. Starches can protect anything that thickens the matrix so that – the matrix. Anything that thickens it so that the proteins can't agglomerate together is going to stabilize. Yeah?
Yeah, maybe – I mean, it made me think for a second, like, there might be some sort of, like, plant proteases in chicory. So, like, you can make, like a thistle or a nettle cheese. So then you get, like protein curdling via like protein breakdown, like a rennet.
Is chicory related to cardoons?
I don't think so. I mean, it might be, but I have a feeling your tannin theory might be more correct.
Right,
than
but
that.
It is
but
true.
It's possible.
There are plants that have enzymes that coital things, and so maybe it's there. So hey, so Liquor Boss and Bitters Boss, like any commercial amaros that are chicory based?
Nothing that I know of.
Nothing springs to mind.
Since you guys, well, since we know at least Don has had chicory coffee in the past 5 years, like, what do you think it would take? Like, what kind of Amaro kind of base would you want to make with something like that? Would you want to do like a bitters base with it? Is it not an interesting enough bitter?
It's not that interesting, to be honest. I'd do birch before I would do chicory.
Mm. Yeah, birch isn't that bitter though.
Yeah, but that's why you add other things to it.
It's yeah, but as a bittering agent, you wouldn't use it as a bittering agent? Like, if you're going to do, like, a Southern Amaro, let's say. Like a New Orleans Amaro.
Yeah, maybe.
Like a birch and cane syrup. And
Right, but it's not nearly as bitter as, like, quassia or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
But chicory isn't that bitter either, so it's...
That's what I'm saying. Well, the chicory's not as bitter, so, like, you wouldn't pick it as a straight-up bitterant because you'd use something else that is, like, bitter.
Right. But so if he's got the chicory syrup already, he can do like a cafe brulee if he wants to go kind of New Orleans style. Then you're adding coffee, doing a little like rum flame job.
Flame job.
Yeah.
Flame
good stuff.
Job. Yeah. Is our tea water hot yet?
Oh, I can check.
Yeah. So, ooh.
Doesn't it make a little like happy sound? It's one of those Japanese.
Is it Zojirushi?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
You know, at my Zojirushi rice cooker at home, I have the induction, the 18 cup, the one before the pressure, but at the time I got it, which was over a decade ago, it was the highest end one. And Booker, you know, he's on the spectrum, right? So Booker used to not be able to stand the noise of the music that the Zojirushi, and so he wouldn't let me cook rice. And so I had to ripped open the Zojirushi and like just cut the speaker wire. So now like I forget that Zojirushi equipment plays tunes for you when it's done. I don't even remember what the tune sounds like. Do you remember? You know what a Zojirushi done tune is?
I have both a rice cooker and a like the hot water thing, and they play a different tune, but I could not tell you what those tunes are.
Oh, so you? You think subconsciously you know? Oh, my tea is ready. Or like, so, or oh, my rice is ready by the tune it plays.
Well, I never do both at the same time. So
well, assuming you did, like it should just come out and say rice, and just let you choose the languages, right? Rice.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I never remember in. I don't know how to say rice in Japanese, and I never remember which one's rice in Chinese: the chow or the fan. One's fried, one's rice.
For the record, I'm Korean, not Chinese.
I know this.
He doesn't know that.
But noodles are main, right? So chow is the frying.
Fry.
Yeah, and then
so
fan
must be
the rice. Yeah.
And so for completeness, in Korean, what is it?
So in the Chinese character version, it's pan. But it's usually you say pop as the kind of the modern Korean way of saying it, and then in Japanese it would be gohan, right? Is rice?
Oh, okay, Gohan Society.
Yeah,
nice. All right. Well, it just goes to show how little I know about languages. Okay, is it ready?
We are obtaining the correct vessels for brewing tea.
And what is the correct vessel for brewing tea?
I would imagine a teacup.
Teacup.
Or a mug.
Yeah.
Are you guys gonna do like Gong Fu Chai kind of stuff on this or what? No. No.
Should we play trippy music?
Yeah.
When we're drinking it, we should play some trippy music underneath.
And I think so, too.
Do we know how long this needs to steep for?
Till it's done, yo. okay, and Ellie also writes in, P.S., Dave, the Lebanese halawa, or halva, made from sesame paste and chock full of pistachios, kicks that Mexican fake halva, which is, you know, remember the, what's that stuff called again, Don? The Mexican, the I loved it. I love it. No, it's called like...
The wedding cookies?
No, no, the one that's basically like peanut paste.
Yeah, yeah, it's got like the little rose on it.
Yeah.
I don't know, other than being like the peanut cookie.
I don't know, it just went out of my head. It's that stuff's delicious, but Ellie here is saying that like real halva kicks the crap out of that peanut stuff, or like the Brazilian version. Anyway, I don't know. What do you think? Are you a halva? I like halva.
It's okay. I'm not a big halva fan.
But do you like those peanut, the peanut thing?
Occasionally. It's so dry, though.
It's named after marzipan. It's called mazapan. Mazapan, that's what it's called, because it's like marzipan, but it's like mazapan. So it's what's hilarious is it's like halva, but named after marzipan, and it's like neither, which is, you know, whatever. Classic. Okay. All right, let's see. We got any more questions in. Did I handle the one about cook? I handled the one about batching your food, right? The one who wanted to, guy who wanted to cook lean foods. Or Chris. Yeah, I handled that. All right. I handled the fermentation. I can't believe it. I actually think I got through. I dealt with Peggy with from Australia. Her questions, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Remember that whole conversation?
Yeah, but there's another Australian. Yeah. No, there's a Pittsburghian.
Oh, yeah, well, that's for today. That's today. I'm trying to actually get through last week's stuff, which I think is, good. I think I've done it. Yeah. I think I've done it. All right. So, wait. What milk?
We're not putting milk in.
I'm not putting milk, nor am I putting sugar in. Brew this stuff up. Brew it up.
Well, you don't have to. I think the barista was just being nice to you.
I don't like when people are nice to me. I don't appreciate it.
I know you don't.
I hate it. All right. Now, today's questions. From Luke. Hey, all. Can you pass this question on to Dave and the crew? Is it possible... This is a good one, Don, for you.
Oh, yeah?
Is it possible to make cocktails while you're camping? My question is about ice. How would it be possible to transport and or make ice while camping for a week? Thanks for the great show, Luke.
Well, go hiking on a glacier. That's the easiest way.
Exactly, which Don has actually done. Like, Don went camping in an RV, though, so it's RV camping. But still camping.
Still camping.
That's another way to do it. Have an RV in Iceland.
Yeah, just go, if you go in the winter, you go winter camping. Go mountaineering up in Rainier. It's a glacier. It's always there.
Yeah, of course. Then they probably want the hot beverage.
Right.
Yeah, well.
But that's not the question.
That's not, well, presumably that's not the question.
Right.
The other question is how much stuff can you pack in, right? So you can bring ice and then, like, bury it in a pit in the ground. And like a 40-pound block of ice will last a long time buried in a pit in the ground in an insulated container. But now you're packing 40 pounds of ice in with you. Another thing you can do is you could. Does anyone make like a spot chiller like with CO2 cartridges that?
No one does, but if you wanted to take a fire extinguisher with you, you could basically make dry ice in like a pillowcase on the fly. Use that to. Chill water if you really wanted to.
Right, so pre-dilute the stuff and then bring a dry ice bag.
Yep.
I'm surprised no one makes like a dry ice maker attached to a 20-ounce CO2 like air gun bottle should be able to make on the order of 7 ounces of dry ice, which is enough to chill like a good bit of cocktail.
Right, but you're now carrying all this stuff in. So the real baller move is, you know, like if you're going to go kind of like long distance backcountry, Appalachian Trail kind of thing, you have people like leave you supply drops. So you just have a bunch of Sherpas go out multiple days in advance carrying big blocks of ice buried in advance at your campsites. And then when you get to the campsite, you just have to dig it up.
Yeah.
That's the baller move.
That is a baller move. Also, you know, I think if you stick with, drinks that are meant to be enjoyed at warmer temperatures, like old-fashioned or something like this, you're not going to get it down to technically to old-fashioned, but if you dig a hole that is – by the way, when you're bringing liquor camping, you should always buy the – they make little bottle sacks. They're like water bottles that are plastic that hold liquor, and they're incredibly light. And, of course, you should only drink boxed wines when you're camping because it's incredibly light to bring boxed wines with you.
Joanna's making cocktails on her Burning Man.
Yeah, but she's going with an RV. That's easy.
And you can buy ice every day there.
She said you can.
She didn't want to. She wanted to, whatever. I don't want to. Get, she there right now?
No.
It's 2 weeks. It's what was it? The last weekend of August, first weekend of September, something like that.
Yeah. Anyway,
so the other thing you can do is if you are going to be by a moving body of water, like a river or a lake that you know has some kind of flow, a deep enough lake, if you are boating in any way, you can just get a mesh sack. You can put all the, everything you want into watertight bottles, like a Nalgene, drop it in, and then just hang that off the back of your boat. The water temperature will be pretty cold, so you get fairly cold drinks. So even if you have sodas or beers, it's a common way of chilling it if you're on a lake or like on a river.
That's yeah, and the awesome. Lower you go, the cooler it'll go. And if you're not, if you dig down to about 3 or 4 feet underground, even if you don't hit water, you're probably going to get down to temperatures close to like in the 50s somewhere. And you want a real old school baller, sweet, sweet baller trick. If you put your bottle in a jug, clay jugs are the best, but you put it into a jug and then you put towels that lean out over it, you'll get wicking and evaporation, and you can basically turn your bottle into an evap cooler. So if you wrap your bottle in something that has a water reservoir so it stays moist, but it wicks up and air moves across it and keep it in the shade, right. it will evaporate off, and you could probably get a good – and if go on any of the old – see, the golden age of the camping book was roughly 1880 to roughly 1940. Right? That's the kind of the golden age of the camping book. So you can look up there's a guy named Mason who wrote a famous one called Woodcraft. There's a bunch of famous – a guy named Sears who's went by the you know the pseudo-Indian name of Nesmuk wrote one. And all of these folks have these old tricks on how to keep things cool. Now, they're not going to make ice, but they try to keep things as cool as possible. They're specifically worried about like stuff going bad that's refrigerated, like, for instance, the animal you just shot in the face. They all have strategies for things like that. Another good way is to go camping in the high desert. It gets pretty cold at night. You get some serious evaporative cooling there. You could probably get a good temperature delta like 20 degrees or something like that.
So, Dave, I'm backcountry camping by Lake Superior next week. So I'll try out some of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, you should get a hold of that book, one of those books, Woodcraft. Yep. I think Mason does it. There's another one, a famous guy. I can't remember his name. But they're all published between, like I say, like the late 1800s and the 1940s. So they all they are prior to the leave no trace model of camping. And so, like, the first thing they do is fell a number of large trees. and then have the person who brought your, you know, camp equipment in with you. Like, some of them tell you how to trek alone, but also some of them tell you how to do like the old gentleman's camp where you do have people that you hire to carry all your crap in.
Right.
Nice.
Like all your cartridges and guns and...
It's like burn a 30-foot circle for your campsite and salt the earth when you leave.
you would not believe, Ariel, you would not believe like the... They're like, if you need to make a fire to cook on, like literally they fell two giant trees and make a V so that you have like a larger fire as it goes down to a V, and then they fill the entire interior of this like 15, 16-foot long V with logs, light the whole sucker up down to coals, fell another tree to make like cross... braces for like spits. I mean, it's just they're freaking bananas. These folks are bananas, and they have people carrying like large cast iron. Remember, like things like Dutch ovens used to be camp equipment.
Yeah.
Would you carry one of those things into the woods? No, you would not. No, you would not.
Car camping.
Car camping or like camping? Hired people camping. You know what I mean?
That's glamping.
Glamping.
Yeah, but it used to just be like the way you did it. But then there was like the nutbags, like the Muirs and whatnot, who would just like, you know, go out there. This guy, Nesmuk, I told you about, he was one of the original like canoe portage guys all around the Adirondacks up in upstate New York. And he had someone build him like a traditional Native American bark canoe. He was a small guy. He was a very small guy. So he could get away with a short kind of a canoe, a small canoe. His canoe, I think, weighed like under 15 pounds. And so he just, you know, would just like, you know, go out with that and like his backpack and, you know, and chill. People, you know, you can't really do that anymore. It doesn't really, I don't know. This stuff looks weird, man. This stuff got emulsified
crap
in it.
So like the tea bags have this sort of like greasy, greenish color to them, and then as soon as you put the tea bag in the water, it becomes kind of cloudy.
Is there any actual tea in it? It does have a bitter back to it.
It has real tea in it.
Yeah, it tastes kind of. I was going to say it tastes somewhat like tea. It tastes like tea.
Yeah, well, it's been brewing for like 4.5 minutes now.
So. You've been brewing for 4.5 minutes now.
Not Don's.
No, I took mine out immediately.
Wait, are you drinking it?
Yeah.
But are you drinking it, Jack?
Well, he's gonna
I'm not.
There's two.
Do you want one, Jack?
Sorry. No. I mean, I should not.
I'm working.
Yeah.
Like, we're not. Like, we're not working. All right, I'm sipping this. Oh. How much of this do I have to drink to get anything?
Well, you have the packet. You have, like, the...
I think the bottom line is you're not actually going to get high ever.
Well, I don't think you're going to. It says there's no psycho... No.
Well, there's got to be psychoactive. Why am I doing it if there's... Why?
Because
why?
What Ariel is
the other why?
Hey. It's like, you know, it's like O'Doul's. All of the beerness with none of the beerness.
Exactly.
No, but like, in other words, this stuff, see, what's it called? I'm saying CJD, which is Jakob's Creutzfeldt disease, which is not what we want to say.
No, exactly.
CBD. This has supposed to have some sort of benefit for me, right? I'm supposed to vibe. My POV is supposed to get vived up.
It's like homeopathy, though. It's, you know, it's going to make everything better. There's no science behind that.
Is it? I don't know. Is there? Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, someone's got to call in. Someone's got to read. What do you think, though? What do you think? Do you like the flavor of it?
It's not very good tea. First criticism. Second of all, I mean, it definitely tastes like the cannabis oil.
I don't like that flavor.
It's not.
Jack,
it's,
you don't like that flavor?
No.
By the way, I've learned a lot about Jack. And when we're going to drink that, this is like, that's the music that he puts on. Like, I was thinking more like, see, I'm not a user. Right, I was thinking more like Pink Floyd metal. One of these days, I'm going. What's it? Chop you into little pieces. You know that song? Bam, 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 bam. Any of you guys listen to that old style Pink Floyd stuff?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I had to go with the royalty free, also. You know.
Yeah, that is.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah. Do you think Pink Floyd's gonna like really get on our case for telling people that one of these days we're gonna chop them into little pieces?
I mean, Roger Waters. Yeah, I could see it happening.
Wow, calling him out.
Yep.
All right, let's take a commercial break, and we'll come back, see whether or not we're psychoactively affected on the cooking issues.
Hello out there. It's Steve Jenkins. I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at...
Oh, we're not. And we're back. Oh, by the way, I like how you cut him off right when he was going to say to visit our website.
He got high.
I got high.
Yeah.
I got high.
It was heritagefoodsusa.com.
Speaking of...
That was the website.
Yeah. Speaking of website, like pretty soon you guys are going to be able to... What's it called? Live? What are you going to live? They're going to be able to live do?
So many things.
There's a forum.
The new website's really awesome. Yeah, the live stream, you can... There'll be a chat. So you can, like, actually chat us live. I'll have it all pulled up here. So, you know, you can harass us, ask us questions, make comments, and then I can pass those on to Dave.
Right. So the way it'll work is like, let's say – I'm not saying you're doing this, but let's say you're at your place of work and you have the headphones on. Which, by the way, when I was a kid, you couldn't do that crap. You couldn't put headphones on when you're at work, you know. Anyway, let's say you have your headphones on.
At your children's workplace?
Your cubicle. Yeah, right. Yeah, you have them on, and you're listening to us, but you can't call in, but you want to say – so you, what you do is you'll stream crap in. Jack will see it, and you'll be like, hey, Jack, tell those idiots that they're wrong. They're morons. And he'll say, you know, blah, blah, at Hoosie Mutz at McBlah Blah says that you are, you know, idiots, right? And then
that's what will happen, yeah.
That's exactly how it's going to work. And there's other benefits to this new website that you guys helped pay for. Is this true or false?
True. 100% true.
Yeah.
I have a caller.
Oh, all right. Caller, you are on the air.
Hi, this is Jess. Hi, Dave. Hi, Don.
Hey, Jess. How's it going?
Hi, good. My question is kind of for both of you. Don, I know you and I got in a very intense conversation in New Orleans in regards to categories of food. And I just wanted to know kind of Dave's perspective. We got in a pretty intense argument about if a quesadilla falls under the category of a sandwich. And I just wanted to know what Dave thinks.
Okay, listen. 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 Okay. I got to calm down here. Let's look at this in a, from a number of different perspectives, okay? Define sandwich, Don.
I believe a sandwich involves two things of starch.
Oh, rice?
Something in between.
Wait, whoa. Squished rice?
You're not letting him.
All right.
Arranged horizontally. I think you can make things with rice crackers.
No. That is a No.
You could make a what is it?
Ritz crackers with peanut butter. Is that a freaking sandwich?
Is matzah with peanut butter in between a sandwich?
You know what an Oreo is? A sandwich cookie. Indeed. Not a sandwich.
So sandwich is an adjective as well as a noun.
Sandwich is a category of the way you stack.
First of all,
it could be a bad sandwich.
No. First of all,
sandwich you don't want.
Sandwich is made here's sandwich is with bread. Bread.
Once again, I go to the matzah example. Then it is the bread of suffering. It is the, you know. Are you going to deny the Jews their bread when they're running away from the Egyptians?
Two pieces of pizza flipped on themselves. Are they a freaking sandwich?
Only if there's something in between, but it's not pizza.
So is a calzone a sandwich?
No, because it's round.
It's calzone.
What?
It's like a burrito.
What? Burrito definitely not a freaking sandwich.
Clearly, much like a wrap.
Oh, a calzone.
Not
quesadilla, not then, because it's folded.
Okay, here's the question then.
What about a freaking...
If you were down to the last slice of bread, and you wanted to make a sad grilled cheese, and you folded that last piece of bread in half with cheese, and you've made it on a griddle, is that still a grilled cheese?
If you believed in God, you would cut the bread in half rather than fold it. But,
or even if you were an atheist with like a iota of self-respect.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like... But I don't know that this folded thing, for instance, a lobster roll is a sandwich, and it's made on a split bun.
Definitely not.
It's a freaking sandwich.
Is a hot dog a sandwich then?
Obviously not. I mean, in other words, it is a sandwich, but it gets its own category, right? It gets its own category.
No, the only thing that gets its own category is a hamburger.
Hamburger gets its own freaking category.
Hot dog,
what's a patty
not
melt?
Its own category.
What's a patty melt?
It's a kind of hamburger.
My question is it now a matter of horizontal versus vertical? And how you actually consume.
How would you construct a vertical quesadilla?
No, the hot dog is vertical.
Or long, then
it
is wide.
The split in the bread is vertical, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay.
So whereas a Italian sausage so when, know, on a
so when you buy a crappy
horizontal.
When you buy a crappy hot dog freaking bun and you open it too much to toast it because you're one of those people that toast their freaking hot dog buns, right? And it breaks into two and you hand them that crippled hot dog that falls through the thing, is it now a freaking sandwich?
No,
you have to hold it sideways.
No, because if it's fallen through, it's still vertically stacked. It's not horizontally stacked.
So, but then if you have to like rotate it 90 degrees,
yeah.
Now it's a sandwich?
Now you have a failure of a hot dog.
So the Oxford Dictionary, what do we think? An item of food consisting of two pieces of bread.
Two pieces.
Mm-hmm, with meat, cheese, or other filling in between them. Eaten as a light meal.
So, what the hell?
So would you say
shows what they know. Oxford, by the way.
Sandwich, not a sandwich?
Oxford English Dictionary, world renowned for being crappy when it comes to definitions of food or etymologies related to food or historical timelines related to food. World renowned for being the worst.
Where should he go?
Where should he go? To life. The company Subway, right? Do they manufacture sandwiches?
A sub is a subcategory of sandwich, yes.
Even though they're not split all the way in two anymore? Look, in the old days, they would take the knife and they would go, shippy, 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 and rip the V out, and then the V would be a pseudo top to it. Now, they just slice it in half because they're too inept to use the V slice anymore, and that's why if you get a Subway now versus a Subway 15, 20 years ago, it used to be you could eat them without it spraying all over the inside of everything, and now everything sprays everywhere because it's just
so
nasty.
I have no idea how you eat a Subway sandwich that's spraying everywhere.
Because I get lots of toppings. I enjoy mayonnaise and mustard. And so, like, the stuff, like, they put it at the end, and it freaking extrudes out of the side. The most important thing in sandwich is not the definition. It's the construction, the layering that goes into a proper sandwich.
It's true.
The worst thing you can do somebody is to silo their burrito. Have you ever done this as a joke?
No, what is it?
When you give them, when you make a burrito for somebody, you make them in silos of all the different ingredients the wrong way.
No, but that shows why a burrito is a piece of crap. Because it's got the too much freaking, like, I want my rice and beans separately. I want a small object, like, that I can consume. First of all, like, a burrito is an inferior chimichanga, right? And an inferior it's like an inferior, it's an inferior product, no?
It's an inferior product, I agree.
Yeah. What do you think, Ariel?
Inferior to what?
Well, like, for instance, like, it would be better just if you deep fried it and turned it into a chimichanga.
That's true. I would always rather have, like, two or three tacos than a burrito.
Oh, 100% of the time.
Yeah, 100%.
I'd rather have taquitos than a burrito.
Yeah.
I'd rather have enchiladas, even though it's totally different than a burrito. And I would rather have quesadilla, frankly, than a burrito.
But is it a sandwich?
Quesadilla? Here's another thing. Like, is an open-faced sandwich, even though it's called open-faced sandwich, a sandwich?
Yes.
Not according to the Oxford English Idiots.
I would say yes, because the normal form is closed, and you have to denote that it has been opened.
But it doesn't serve, they don't serve it with an extra
piece
of bread.
But don't a sandwich you have to eat with your hands?
Ooh, here's an interesting question. Mm. Bill de Blasio would say you can eat anything with a knife and fork, including pizza.
Well, like in...
He's wrong about that.
In Denmark, where I usually live, we have, like, open-faced sandwiches.
See, I disagree with you.
Which are impossible to eat with your hands. You, like, literally cannot.
But a smorgas is never meant to be a closed sandwich that you may or may not open. A smorgas is always open.
Oh, yeah, smorgasbord is always
open. It is the normal form of a smorgas is already open.
Yeah.
So you didn't take a sandwich and open it to make a smorgas. It always.
But then
open.
If you ask a Danish person what a smorgasbord is, they're, open-faced sandwiches.
But why would you ask a Danish person that? They're just being polite. They're trying to translate it because they all speak English, and they're not worried about the nicety, the fine points of the language, right? I mean, right?
We got a tweet in.
This is why. What's
this tweet about sandwiches?
It's our
buddy Elliot. He says, sandwich argument, same as pretzel argument. A sandwich is one thing, everything else subcategory.
Well, the pretzel argument to me is there's no such, like, a pretzel rod is not a freaking pretzel. It's a pretzeloid. Like,
so sandwichoids, maybe.
Well, yeah. In other words, it's like, is Pluto a planet? Nah, it's planetoid. I mean, it's in the same realm, although I don't really think of anything with unleavened bread, matzo-based sandwiches, as, like, the actual hardcore category. To me, it has to be leavened. So anything that with a tortilla base or, like, a roti is not a sandwich. Like anything that's got an unleavened bread base, to me, is not really technically how I think of as a sandwich. To me, it has to be kind of a leavened bread base. I think it can be opened or closed as long as you designate it. I think it's like anything else. It's like pornography. I know it when I see it. You know what I mean? It's like a sandwich is – you can just tell what it is. But a pretzel is super freaking clear. A pretzel, okay, a pretzel is a wheat dough that contains no oil. You hear that? Bachmann's. Pretzel contains no oil, right? It's usually made with a sourdough kind of a leavening technique. It is rolled into a tube shape, twisted into a pretzel shape, right? It is a pretzel shape, right? It is then cooked in an alkali solution briefly. And if it's not cooked that way, then it is a pretzel-shaped piece of bread, right? And then you can either cook it hard or soft. And you can have it with salt because you like things that are good, or without salt because you're a bad person. Or sometimes sugar. Some idiots dip it in butter, but I don't like that. Do you like that style? This soft pretzel dipped in butter?
It's not my favorite.
Hey, here's one.
I mean, I like butter, but...
Okay, like, bagels clearly... Here's the interesting one. Is a bagel a sandwich? When you cut it open?
A bad sandwich.
I don't believe in eating bagel top and bottom together. We've had this discussion.
You shouldn't. You could make a bad sandwich.
Yeah, I've heard people like say that I'm bad because they like to eat their bagel top and bottom
because
the same
time. All the fillings to squeeze out.
Yeah,
and get ruined.
But those people are just wrong. We all know that.
Well, I think the reason is because they're eating a bagel that has no backbone, no structure. So there's like
twice the bagel to get any of the effect.
Yeah, like a bagel should be eaten with. Like, open, whatever you have on it should be open.
Yeah.
It should always be open.
Always.
An egg sandwich on a bagel, you're opening that up?
No, that's wrong. You should never put an egg sandwich in a bagel.
Egg sandwich and Kaiser roll.
Come on.
Jack, how long have you been in New York? Egg sandwich goes on Kaiser roll 100% of the time. Unless
I say
one of those.
One out of every five times I go for the bagel.
What?
No.
You one out of every five times you were
wrong. I get an egg sandwich.
First of all, in my mind, I have that nasty, sallow, like... uneven bagel in my head that you get at the joint that's making the egg sandwich. That thing's just an abomination anyway. That was made like 8 years ago, that bagel. Blech.
Yeah.
Blech. What do you think about the croissant sandwich?
Slicing a croissant open and putting something inside is a long tradition. Is it a sandwich? No, it's a pastry.
Ooh.
Different thing.
Anyway, like I was saying, like there are things like for or against. I would like if I said let's have sandwiches and someone handed me a hot dog, I'd get angry. If someone said let's have sandwiches and they handed me a quesadilla, I would tell them to go to hell. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's just like honestly what would happen. If someone handed me something that's like closer to a sandwich, frankly, if I said I want a sandwich and they handed me an open-faced sandwich with gravy poured all over it, like a piece of toast, some freaking like shredded dry as hell turkey and gravy on the top, I'd be like, I asked for a freaking sandwich. You know what I mean? Like, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Here's my question. I think we've done this before. BLT season coming up, people. And by the way, I had some of Nastasia's tomatoes on my first BLT of the season. They were delicious. Thank you, Nastasia. Yeah. BLT sandwich. Do not let people make their own BLT sandwiches because they will not put mayonnaise on both the top and the bottom piece of toast. Do not over toast your BLT so that your mouth becomes excoriated from the BLT as you chew on it.
It's true.
Do not make a BLT from a bread with too much structure. This will ruin the effect of a BLT sandwich. Do not make a BLT with some wimpy kind of like fancy Dan lettuce that doesn't have good crunch. My preferred BLT lettuce is iceberg. Crap on all of you. Anyone going to come out against me on this? What do you use?
No, I think that's correct.
All right. A good tomato, right? And like three strips of good bacon, salt, pepper, that's it. You should also salt the tomato separately, and you should pepper the mayonnaise on each side of the bread.
Amen.
That is how you make a freaking BLT sandwich.
What about a refrigerated tomato?
Oh, my God. You got to get Daniel Fisher. All right, listen.
Get out.
Nastasia told me we're going to get kicked off the air soon. Hey, what are your thoughts on this cannabinoid tea, by the way? Cannabidiol? What?
Seems like tea.
Cannabidiol.
Sounds like cannabis. You like it or not? You feeling anything?
I'm not feeling anything.
I'm thumped down. It doesn't make the tea taste any better. Like adding bergamot to tea makes delicious Earl Grey. Adding cannabin whatever oil to the tea makes it taste like muddy something.
But it's a functional thing. It's a functional thing.
So. I'm feeling no function from this tea.
But you're not supposed to. Anyway, listen. Nastasi tells me that we're going to be on hiatus for a month because we're going on hiatus for a month while they sit. And when we come back from the hiatus, the new website will be up and running and you can live tweet us and all. So let me try to rip through a couple questions instantaneous fashion. Zach from Pittsburgh writes in, how you doing? Pittsburgh is the place to go if you like races, huh? It comes from an earlier thing because someone said that to me. Oof. I doubt it is much different than any other city. There are good people here and bad. Our food scene is getting a lot better. It is pretty nice. Check it out sometime. I'd like to. Food questions. Why can't restaurants handle fresh-cut French fries? So many places like to talk up their fries, but then you get them and they look great, but in reality they are undercooked, floppy, waxy, and bad. A good French fry shouldn't be so hard to pull off, especially when it's probably your most served food item. To me, it is a sign that they just don't care about quality. Well, that's right. It actually is more difficult than most people are willing to take on to make a good French fry. It's not difficult in the sense that you don't need to have a PhD to do it, and you don't need to be a rocket scientist, but you do need to do more steps than most people want to do. To make a good French fry, even if you don't use the enzymes or any other stuff, requires one boil step, at least a dry step, and a single fry, and then probably a free step, and then a fry. Hmm. So if you're not willing to do all that crap, like with a soak beforehand, you have some sort of soak, whether or not you use the enzyme or not. So like you're talking about a several hour prep and you do it. So most people are like, I'm going to make a high quality French. See, here's the thing. Orida, right, or whoever you're buying your French fries from when you're buying Cisco, whatever it is, like, yeah, most of the stuff they make is direct compared to what could be made at home, but they have a lot of research time and decades of French fry under their belts, right? And also frying French fries from frozen turns out to be a good way to get good crust texture. So I often, depending, especially if I can't do my enzyme treatment, I will freeze my fries because for a quality reason, right? So you're going up against – it's like trying to make ketchup. Like Heinz does a good job. You know what I mean? So you – in order to do a better job, you have to actually put in more work than you'd think. And most people who make their own French fries simply don't know how to do it or they don't care. You know what I mean? Okay, we have one more I want to get in before we go. Let's see, one more. Hold on a second. Okay, you ready for this? This is a complicated one. We have a call. By the way, the best Twitter thing, a Jew's Boosh.
Instagram.
A Jew's Boosh. He's Orthodox? David Statman, he's Orthodox. So anyway, he wants to use the Searsaw on Sabbath, right? So here's the thing. He's like, you're allowed to transfer a flame, but you're not allowed to make a flame. So the Burnsomatic TS-8000 that we use, you press the button, click, 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 right? And it causes the flame. So he's saying the button's the problem, right? And then, but transferring the flame's okay. So he wants to get a different torch and pass, basically just turn the gas on and pass the flame to the Searsaw that way. My feeling is, David, now I'm no rabbi, but my feeling is, just saying, no rabbi.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure. But my feeling is that you are not allowed to turn the valve on. Can anyone do that? Jack, like while we're signing out, can you do a quick search on whether or not you're allowed to open and close valves on the Sabbath?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't believe you're allowed to open and close valves on the Sabbath.
It sounds dubious.
Yes. I don't, because I would believe that that's the functional equivalent of a circuit, and you can't turn circuits off and on. Mm. Anyways, so my feeling is you're going to be shafted on the valve. Now, what we could do is you could hook up – don't do this. It's incredibly unsafe. Please don't do this. But you could hook up a timer to turn on a torch at a specific time, including the piezo ignition. And as long as you set it up right at the right time, you could do it. Another option is that you need to go read Alan Dundas's book, The Sabbath Elevator. Okay, there's a whole book on the Sabbath Elevator by a guy named Alan Dundas, who found out only about things like the Sabbath Elevator late in his life. He's a folklore expert, even though he's actually he's Jewish, but he just didn't know much about it. I guess I don't know why he's not doing the research. And he did a bunch of stuff on when it is okay to use, the Sabbath goy, right?
Yeah.
So, for instance, in the elevator, like technically, you know, I can push the button for you because I'm a goy. Although you got to make sure that I'm not Jewish, because if I'm Jewish but not practicing, like that's not cool. But you're not technically supposed to be like, hey, dude, can you press that button? They just have to know to do it, right? Hmm. So you have to pre-hire the goy to show up. Invite a goy to dinner on Sabbath. This is my plan. Invite a goy to dinner on Sabbath and tell them, like, you know, when you get here, it might be nice, like, when I lift my hand in the air, if you were to take my TS-8000, ignite it, and depress the button that keeps it on. And then they could do that, and then you could sear with it, and then you'd be like, and then they would know that when you put it down, you'd be like, and when I put the thing down, it might be nice if it didn't stay on and burn my house down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Searsaw goy.
Searsaw goy.
No valves.
No valves. See, you're gonna have to go with the Searsaw goy.
Yeah.
Searsaw goy. We'll come back in 1 month. Cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.